Welcome to the Marvel Cinematic University Podcast. I'm your host, Anthony Canton III, and we are here for a special episode, as it's been a while since we've talked Star Wars. I feel like Star Wars is this thing that continues to go on the periphery of Disney and Marvel and everything that we normally talk about on this show, but we are happy to do this evening with a special guest. But before we get to him, I am with the super producer, Jake Christie. Jake, how are you?
I'm doing well. Excited to be talking about Star Wars again. Love Star Wars. You know, I've been a Star Wars fan longer than a Marvel fan, so it's fun to talk about.
Yeah, so salute to that. And yes, our guest, he wears many hats. His name is Amin El-Hassan, Metal Arc Media, amongst many things. Oddball, Bully Ball, Bomb, Cinephobe. There's just so many things going on. But Amin, welcome to the program. How you doing, sir?
I'm doing great. I like to work, I guess. In takeaway, I like to work.
Oh, man, it's good to have you on. And let's immediately get into it with this, because the Acolyte trailer came out last week, and It's a show that Jake and I have been, at least for the last month or so, as we've been hearing tidbits and pieces about what this show is, been very excited because of the kind of different take it has on the whole Jedi-Sith relationship and vantage point that we look at this relationship. Mm-hmm. So what do you think of how this type of storytelling could kind of change the viewpoint for Star Wars fans who haven't been used to seeing it on screen?
Yeah, so I heard about this television show, maybe it was probably 3 or 4 years ago, about the concept that, hey, they're going to do a show. It's going to be set in the past, in a past that has not been explored on screen for Star Wars. And they're going to do it from the point of view of the Sith. And this, obviously, Star Wars has always been a story told. The Jedi are the good guys. The Jedi are the main thing. And the Sith are the opposition. And that's the prequels, that's the sequels, that's the original trilogy. But I think what the prequels did, and particularly the animated show, The Clone Wars, what it did was, in a very real way, it made it a little grittier, right? So, in real life, there's no such thing as good and evil. These are the good guys, these are the bad guys, and it's easy and it's simple. It's not that simple. Things are very complicated. And there are numerous bad actors operating on both sides. And there are people who are acting in good faith, but just make the wrong decisions. And so if we're going to talk about in the prequels, the Jedi Order, part of it is the collapse is because they could not detect that there was a Sith Lord, not only among them, but kind of telling them what to do. Palpatine was running the galaxy on both sides, in both the Separatists and the Republic. And no, and the Jedi was supposed to be these, you know, mystical space wizards, supernatural, can read people's minds and stuff. They couldn't detect what was a very clear and present danger among them. But part of it also is because of their hubris and their glut, right? It was just, they were fat off the land. They weren't sharp. They thought they knew everything. They were arrogant. And that's how that gets pulled off. And so if your starting point is like, that's how the Jedi ended, how'd they get to this point? And so this show is supposed to help us understand how, A, the Jedi get to a point from enlightened to kind of fat, decadent, lazy people. And also how the Sith, who were supposed to have been destroyed, how they survived for centuries through this concept of the rule of two, and how it ends up with, you know, the Order 66 that Palpatine orders.
Right. And Jake, just to get your thoughts on this as well, because we haven't talked about this publicly, as far as the Acolyte is concerned, what are you looking forward to the most about it?
I mean, the thing that excites me most about it is that it's from Leslie Headland, who is someone who you would never expect to do a Star Wars thing. Like, I think that If you were to ask me, what do I think Star Wars needs? I would say someone who has never been within 50 feet of a franchise before. Like, I think, because people forget that, you know, George Lucas made American Graffiti before he made Star Wars. He was not a guy doing these, you know, big opera. Because I think what is so special about the original trilogy in particular is how character-based it is, and especially, you know, A New Hope is really, you know, there's the tidbits about the way the galaxy works, but it's mostly a fairy tale about a kid being whisked away into a world he doesn't understand, and it's a very primal storytelling. It's not, like, Star Wars is not about all of the stuff you can read on Wikipedia about, although that stuff's interesting. That's not what makes Star Wars a great franchise, you know? And so I'm really interested in what we get from the trailer, and what I've gotten from, you know, the tidbits about it, is the way that, like, the meeting of personal betrayal and the dark side of the Force, and how, you know, clearly there's some type of thing where an apprentice goes bad, et cetera, et cetera. And, like, where is this like an ideological difference? Where is this a personal? Because that's the thing that we have a lot, obviously, with Anakin, that on some level he feels personally betrayed by Obi-Wan. And so I'm interested in seeing the way that someone, you know, who has a different background and a different take is going to render that. And I think that Amin's right, where I personally think the most interesting thing about the prequels is them as a metaphor for how governments and how societies get lazy, and how stability, and it, some might say it might be relevant today, of how stability convinces people who have never lived in unstable times that it's inevitable, and how that happens. And I think that the High Republic is a thing that I know has been explored in extended universe stuff a lot, but I think it's just so smart to have it be in the past, so there are thematic things that go along. But I'm very excited by the fact that I don't need to worry about, like, oh, is this character secretly going to be this kid's person's grandfather? You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, it's far enough back where it's functionally a different set of everything, but we will still see the seeds. And so it's not completely unrelated.
Yes. And Amin, just to kind of continue that going forward, like, we have Carrie Ann Moss. She is a Jedi, but she's a Jedi that doesn't use a lightsaber. It's just specifically her own martial arts. What do you, and it seems like one of the twins that are going to be after her, in reading the synopsis of what this series is about, is this one of these twins is dedicated to killing her. It just seems interesting on its own. So what do you think about that aspect of things as far as the actual fighting of this?
Yeah, so I talked about this on my Star Wars podcast, Rule of Two, with Anthony Mays. The idea that Star Wars should have more martial arts. That was my kind of my thesis statement, is Star Wars should have more martial arts. It is a both influenced by Kurosawa and these samurai movies. It's influenced by that, so it lends itself to that. But also just the idea of these fight scenes that we get in the animated shows have a lot of martial arts. And a great example is the last episode of Bad Batch. Aj Ventress fights three different clones. And she doesn't even pull out the lightsaber until late. She's, you know, basically using martial arts to fight them all off, and a little bit of the Force as well. And so I think, man, like, I was watching it, and actually I was talking about this last week, and I was like, we need more, because I think it just elevates everything. And I get it, it's hard enough to get actors to learn how to sword fight. Now I'm asking them to do, you know, some pretty nifty acrobatics. But I think, like, if we start at the start point of we need this, and then work backward to, like, okay, we can cast people who do these things, like Carrie Ann Moss.
Mm-hmm.
Now we're talking about something. Now we're getting somewhere. It's not unlike, I think about Rogue One, and casting Donnie Yen. To be a blind kind of semi-force sensitive guy.
Love,
right?
That guy.
But it's like, how cool was that? Like, him with a staff and just going to work. And he's not a Jedi, but if he were, that would be pretty cool too. So I'm all for it. I'm excited for it. And then as far as the story, like, I kind of reached the point where, like, I don't want to know anymore.
Yeah.
Okay.
I was doing some reading and looking at it, and I was like, you know what? Let me watch this show. It reminded me of going to Star Wars Celebration. This is years and years ago. And saying, going to one of the panels that said, hey, they have a new live action show coming out. It's called The Mandalorian. and I knew nothing about it. And they brought out the late Carl Weathers, and they brought out Pedro Pascal, and they brought out all these people, you know, Jon Favreau and Dave Filoni, and said, oh, it's going to be a great show. It takes place after Return of the Jedi. And the scene they showed us, the exclusive scene they showed us, was him walking into to meeting with Werner Herzog, talking about the bounty and all that stuff.
I would and like to saw, see the baby. Sorry.
Well, this is before he got the baby. This is him getting the job. He walks.
That's an impression
in
I like all, to do. So sorry.
So you see all these stormtroopers, filthy armor, right? Like, because not the upkeep is gone, and they're ragtag group of kind of like warlords and militia, really. And it's like it's just that one scene, and if you see it out of context, you really can't tell much. But man, it was like, okay, I don't know who this dude is. I don't know who that dude is. I don't know what they're talking about, this bounty or whatever. All I know is this looks awesome. And so that's kind of like, I think back at that, and like when I learned about the Acolyte, and I try to learn more and more about it. And then at some point, like, no, let me get that same mystery, because I remember watching that clip and not knowing anything about a Force-sensitive child. I thought there would be no Force in that TV show. Thought it was about bounty hunters, about a lawless land, about how the New Republic isn't quite as put together as one might hope, especially in the Outer Rim. And instead, it became this show about a guy basically adopting this child and the bond that grew between them. And we got more and more. And then obviously you get Ahsoka and you get Luke Skywalker, and you get, and it's like, oh wow, this is really awesome, right? And I think there's something to preserving that sense of wonder, that sense of in the same way that if you guys can remember the first time you watched Star Wars. I remember the first time I watched Star Wars. I remember the first time I found out that Vader is Luke's father. I remember finding out that Leia is Luke's sister. And those memories are very fresh in my head, even now, all these years later. So I kind of want to preserve that a little bit when watching this show.
There's something to be said, definitely, for sure, about, because it kind of goes across like all of these realms. I mean, we talk about Marvel, we've talked about spoiler culture and how that's kind of impacted the discourse about all these things.
I'm gonna say the difference between Marvel and Star Wars is that the source material for Marvel is there, dude. You couldn't surprise me. Tell me that Jean Grey becomes the Dark Phoenix, because I read that shit in 1987. Mm-hmm. You can't surprise me. You can't surprise me that this symbiote gets on Spider-Man and he turns bad. Yeah, I know. I read that in 1985, right? So a lot of those storylines, like if they ever do a Galactus movie, I get it. He eats worlds, and in exchange for sparing worlds, he takes one person, gives him superpowers, and says, you're one of my heralds. Now go find me more worlds to eat. So Marvel always has to constantly fight a battle of, I'm introducing people to some of this stuff for the first time, so I got to go heavy exposition. But a big part of my paying audience are people who already know this shit. And so I'm trying to make what they read and they imagined as kids come to life, right?
Right.
Star Wars is different. Yeah, there's books, but the books aren't seen like a holy grail in the same way. Like, because George didn't write those books, right? In the same way that, you know, the people like, you know, Stan Lee and Jack Kirby wrote Spider-Man. So there is still a little bit of wonder and reveal that happens when you watch a Star Wars show or movie. It's some stuff that you just don't know, or you don't know a whole lot about, other than some vague references.
Yeah, because I think the big difference is, like, because obviously there are things that are surprises in Marvel movies because they don't go one-to-one with any particular comic run. But I think a difference is, with most Marvel movies, if you read the comics, you could guess the first two-thirds of the plot. There's always going to be something at the end that will surprise you. You know what I mean? Like, there was no comic that would have told you that Tony Stark was going to snap and die at the end of Endgame, right? But you could guess, you know, generally the way something would go. The difference with Star Wars is, because it's something that's being made up as it goes along, there can be surprises 20 minutes in. You know what I mean? Like, there will be surprises at every moment, new ideas, new characters, all these things. And so I think you're absolutely right that, and that was something that I felt as someone who didn't watch the animated series, that was something that I could feel a push and pull with when they were doing Ahsoka, that there was, for the one of the first times in Star Wars, a feeling of trying to balance something. And as someone, like I said, as someone who's not familiar with the source material, and it's not the worst thing in the world, I definitely felt like, I feel like this is not for me. And that's fine. But it was the first time in Star Wars I ever felt that way.
We on Rule of Two, we talked about that a lot, where almost weekly we would ask, do people who've never watched Rebels, do they get this? Do they get it? Because I feel like it's a lot of like backstory that you needed to know. See,
I would actually say that the get part, I don't think was the issue necessarily. I think the care part was the big, not the like, because the thing was, because like, I'm a good viewer of stuff. I know that there's context I don't know. I'm not one of those people who's always like, what does this mean? What does this mean? What does this mean? Is that there was a lot of characters or ideas that were introduced that it felt, and once again, I know why they did this, because they have watched the shows, but that it's like, you need to do it. You need to do work to sell me on why I should care about this character beyond just the fact that I'm supposed to recognize them. And it's why I think they were in a rock and hard place, because I think they would have pissed off a lot of viewers of those shows if they had spent like 20 minutes explaining to you why you should care about these characters. But it was something where I'm like, okay, I get that this guy is important and we're supposed to want him to get back, but I would like, are you telling me that I would like to be shown it? And I know the answer was that I probably just should have watched the shows, but you know.
I thought, this is what I thought about. I thought about season 7 of The Clone Wars. The Clone Wars was a TV series that was meant to just explain the things that happened between episode 2, Attack of the Clones, and episode 3, Revenge of the Sith. And then we had season 7, and season 7 basically says, look, man, we're running out of real estate here. At some point, we have caught up to a Revenge of the Sith. And at some point, we're running concurrent to Revenge of the Sith. And the way they did it was they had a bunch of scenes where it's like, this is absolutely happening at the same time as something else, where it's like, where's Obi-Wan? Oh, he had to go to, what's it called, to go catch Grievous. Oh, okay. Like, oh, wait a second. That happened in the movie. And then vice versa. And then there's the actual scene where it is a reverse of what we saw in the movie. So in the movie, Mace Windu and the Jedi Council are talking by holophone with Obi-Wan and a couple of other people. And then in season 7, they do the same exact scene, but they flip it. Now Obi-Wan and Ahsoka are here talking to the Jedi Council versus holophone, right? And so I'm like, I wanted some of that maybe. Maybe you have some flashbacks. Maybe you show these people in the same way they had the flashbacks with Ahsoka and Anakin.
Mm-hmm.
Years, you know, through different battles and really did a great job of demonstrating to people who are new to it, like, yo, what's Anakin Skywalker? And for people like me who are familiar, they managed to still make me realize something I never realized watching an animated show, which was, by the way, Ahsoka was a child soldier. Of course she's fucked in the head, man. Like, we can just think about it, these characters. No, this was a child, and she was out there watching people that she befriended die and stuff and being forced into war, which goes back to our original thing about, like, the Jedi Order being corrupt and kind of faulty and having all these cracks. So I thought they could have done that for Ezra and for Sabine and for some of these other characters.
Ezra was the big one, especially because he's not on screen for so much of the season, that I just would have it would have been nice to see a little bit. And I know that's a complaint, but I think it really is a little bit goes a long way type thing. Where a little bit.
And Thrawn, by the way, because
yes, I don't Thrawn as well.
Dude, I'm reading, or I'm not reading. I'm listening to the audiobook, but I'm reading the Thrawn novels. And I'm on the second one, where there are two different timelines. One is him and Vader have to go to the unknown regions to investigate this disturbance in the Force that the Emperor has felt. And then the second timeline is like 20 years in the past, Thrawn and Anakin Skywalker go to the unknown region, same planet in the unknown region, to rescue Padme. And as they're jumping back and forth between timelines, There's a part where Thrawn says, there's only one place this thing could have come from that factory that we went to 20 years ago. because he went to it with Anakin Skywalker. And Vader's like, whoa, whoa, who is this we were talking about? Like, I don't know what you're talking about, dude. I've never been. Now he turned to Mike Greenberg. Now, this is just my opinion. I don't know anything. I've never been anywhere, right? Because Thrawn figured out that Darth Vader's really Anakin Skywalker, which is the biggest secret, of course, in the entire Star Wars galaxy. So big of a secret that it would take decades. It would take Leia on Return of the Jedi as a senator running for like head of the Senate, and one of her political opponents discovers that she's Darth Vader's daughter and spills the beans, and it becomes this huge scandal, right? Like, how could we elect someone who was the daughter of the worst person ever? How do we know that she wasn't in on it with him and all that stuff, right? Think about that. That's Return of the Jedi. Now, rewind, what is that, 25 years. And there's a dude who's not force sensitive, who's not like super snoopy or whatever, just figured it out by hanging out with this dude. He's like, yeah, the same mannerisms and same everything. You're him, right? Like, so it was one of the things that Thrawn is such an underappreciated character because he's so goddamn smart, man. And when you have a show and you're like, this guy's the big villain, but you don't reveal him until 2/3 into the season. Same thing with Ezra. It's like, we've got a short amount of time to learn, oh, Ezra is actually like a real, like a big kid, and he likes to joke around a lot. And by the way, this guy's Thrawn. He's really smart. Like, we don't have enough time. You wasted all that time telling us that Sabine's not force sensitive, and is she force sensitive? Like, we just didn't need all that. We needed more time, I think, devoting to those characters, because ultimately they are the important ones, right? The Thrawn is the one who's going to be the Thanos in this Star Wars like extended universe, pretty much.
I'm glad you mentioned that, because just in the grand state of Star Wars and some of the stuff, because I know Mando season 3, it was interesting hearing some of the reaction to it, because the Darksaber storyline was something that folks had a big problem with, and the Bo-Katan portion of it, there's just a lot of stuff that people felt uneasy about. I mean, even the Lizzo and Jack Black cameos were just another thing that folks were talking about too. What do you make of, because you mentioned the Thrawn thing and how he's this huge villain, and they're going to do the movie and connect the skeleton crew and Ahsoka and Mando and all these things. How are you feeling right now as they try and create kind of something similar to what the MCU has done in terms of making this like really connected universe?
Yeah, so Dave Filoni being kind of a more prominent voice in that makes me feel good, because I know he cares and I know he knows how all these pieces fit together, all these different storylines fit together. And I think that's an important thing. The biggest problem with the sequel trilogy was they didn't have a Kevin Feige to say, this is the story. Now, within that story, you individual directors, you individual writers can do all of this stuff, but at the end of the day, it cannot supersede this overall story. Mm-hmm. So Force Awakens, we're introduced to Snoke. Snoke's the big bad guy. And what's his name? And Kylo Ren is his apprentice, right? And then Last Jedi says, psych, it's not Snoke. He's dead. Oh, guess what? Kylo Ren, you guys thought he was in conflict and was he in light side, dark side? Psych. No, he's completely a piece of shit, right? Mm-hmm. He's the big villain. And then Rise of Skywalker, like, no, it's psych again. No, he's actually pretty cool. And Snoke was actually Snoke, and somehow Palpatine returned. And that is the kind of like sharp left turn, left turn, left turn, when there's no leader. There's just, everyone is free to tell the story that they want to tell, which is cool if we're telling anthology stories, but if we're doing a thing here, you got to have someone who's a big visionary. So I'm excited for that. I just, you know, you mentioned Mandalorian season 3, which had a lot of the issues that Ahsoka had. I thought the things that they should have slow burned and took their time on, they wrapped it up real quick. Mm-hmm. And the things that like, I don't really care, they just dwelled, they wasted so much time dwelling on stuff we didn't care. So for Mandalorian season 3, for 2 seasons, we've been told that Mandalore is, dude, there's nothing left. It's toxic. You'll die if you go back. And then it's like, you know what? I'm going to go back to Mandalore because I have to do this ritual to absolve myself. So I'm like, okay, we got our season-long arc. And how's Mandalore? And how's he going to find a way? And how's he going to survive? And it's like, no, nope, we wrapped that up in like one episode. Oh, okay. And then it's like the Darksaber. Oh, yeah, Bo-Katan. Her life is in shambles and all this stuff. And now, oh, this is what's going to happen. It's going to lead to the only possible way for her to get the Darksaber is you got to fight goddamn Din Djarin. Oh, yeah. Okay. Wow. All right. Here we go. Like, how are they going to make it to them lead to this inevitable conflict where like this has to go down this way and you can't just surrender. So it's going to be almost like a fight to the death. And then it's like, nope. Next episode is like, yeah, I dropped it. And there's this animal trying to end up. So technically, like, yeah. There's just a lot of like, let's rush through this. Let's rush through this. Even like the idea of them revealing Project Necromancer, which again, mm-hmm. we talked about earlier, a lot of these Star Wars shows are all in service of making sense out of something that didn't make sense. Somehow Palpatine returned. So we get a name, Project Necromancer. We're like, okay, all right. That's why they went because of this and da da da. All right. This is going to be the continuing story here. Like, nope. It was because Giancarlo Esposito wanted the Force for himself. And then we kill him right there. And it's like, why are we rushing those like decent storylines with meat on their bones so that you can tell me a story about some weird planet where Doc Brown is, and this has happened to me. I'm still a separatist. We didn't need that. And so like and it's not fair, but I compare and contrast every one of these like rush to get through it with like Andor.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Crown
Jewel.
Like,
that whole shit was all to let us know. A, you think the Empire is bad because an evil space wizard wants to destroy a whole planet? Like, no, there's a ground level feeling of how terrible this is.
Mm-hmm.
That regular everyday people feel. Because the reality is trillions of people in the Galactic Republic or the Galactic Empire, no fucking idea there was magic. They have no idea.
Yeah.
They just know like, ah, shit, here comes some stormtroopers because I don't have my right papers. I don't have my, what do they call it? My chain code or whatever. And like that day-to-day oppression is what led to the rebellion. It's not the Force and like, shit, man, like half them people don't even believe in that shit.
Mm-hmm.
Like if they've heard of it, they think it's like an old wives tale or whatever. The Jedi and all that shit isn't real. It's just a myth. So they allowed themselves to slow burn and they came out with the best, probably the like objectively the best content in all of Star Wars ever. And that includes Empire Strikes Back and all that other stuff. Yeah.
It's and the thing about it is it's not like it was one continuous story that like it's not like there were no digressions or different things to say together. It's that it all was thematically unique. Because the thing I like about the first season of Mandalorian is that there are a bunch of small different adventures, but they thematically all come back to the same thing. Like I don't mind if Mando needs to visit some planets or whatever, but keep it in with the themes and like the biggest disappointment for me in season three is like they set up the conflict when we first meet Bo-Katan, the different factions of Mandalorians, of like the helmet, not wearing the helmet. And like, that is just not a thing that is relevant really at all. That she kind of like just reluctantly is like, I guess I'll wear the helmet. That it just is like an idea. They have an ideological opposition to each other. And she technically needs to kill him in order to get the saber. And neither of those things pay off.
The saber gets destroyed at that.
Yeah, they resolve. Oh, what should be season long or even seasons long conflicts within a span of a couple episodes. And it's just like, where does this go now? Where do you take it? Well, I don't even know what season four could be about.
I think the question, the bigger question is, is the movie, it seems like the Mando Grogu movie is its own like separate thing. And then they do season four after that. Like what is the plan here is what I'm curious about.
And that's the other issue, which is I wish if I could talk to Kathleen Kennedy. I get it. Corporate is asking. They need things to juice the numbers for the quarterly earnings and speculation and all that. Stop announcing shit. Announce some shit that's getting made. I'm sick and tired of like, Oh, you know what? You guys, we'll do another one of these. Oh, how about this? How about Grogu? Not like that movie. It's a different movie. Oh, you know what? We're going to do a movie, and it's going to be with Patty Jenkins. And it's about the Squadrons. Second thought. We're going to do another movie, and it's going to be with the guys that did Game of Thrones. Ryan Johnson, we love what you did. You're going to get your own trilogy. This constantly updating us with things that are not even pen to paper. Yeah. It feels haphazard. It feels like there is no plan. So they come out at Star Wars Celebration and say, we have three movies coming out. One about the Dawn of the Jedi. One about Rey and the New Jedi Order. And one that's going to be our Avengers Endgame of all of these TV shows that are out now. And I'm like, okay, those three very separate projects, but okay, I get it. And who knows which one comes first. And I know they want to get into High Republic stuff, so I'll go. All right. Okay. And now we're like, and then we get a man. Like, no. Just calm. Sit still. Calm down. Do what you got to do, and then come back later and revisit this if you need to. But it's the stuff that screams we don't have a Kevin Feige. We don't have a plan here.
It's because the thing is, I remember that there was a recent story from Marvel that recently. Some projects have been quietly canceled. And I remember that Charles Murphy, who's a friend of the show, who's plugged in, was asked what announced projects have been canceled. And what he said, which I think is very revealing, is, oh, no. The projects that have been canceled haven't been announced yet. Because at Marvel, if they announce something, they might change it. And there have been obviously a lot of delays and whatever. But has there been a Marvel project that's fully been announced that just is canceled? I don't think that's happened.
No. Kang Dynasty is not going to be Kang Dynasty
anymore. No, but there's going to be... There's going to be two Avengers movies is the thing. Even then it's not because I just looked it up. You know when Star Wars Rogue Squadron was supposed to come out? Last Christmas.
2016? Oh, okay. Last Christmas. Wow. That's announced it a long time. And, Obi-Wan was supposed to be a movie and they made it into a series. And that's another one where it's like, you could have had a whole season of a cat and mouse game between Obi-Wan and Vader. And they're like, season episode two, making me like, oh, guys, throw it out. Give us mystery.
I think that one just should have been a movie. I just think that there just was not.
They should have never.
I think it's too big of a story, especially for people who are really. I mean, like you, Amin, who is incredibly excited for something like that to come. It should be something that should be seen on a big screen and be given the proper weight in storytelling. Because I do agree in the sense that once you have them. Have that duel and the middle of the series, it kind of takes away from the overall scope. And then you go back to that duel at the end of the series as well.
And so my thing was they should have never met at all. But if you're going to make them meet, let that be the crescendo.
I agree.
Don't let it be. And also don't let him kick his ass so thoroughly. Just to remind us, oh yeah, the most powerful force user ever, even with a suit on, is still pretty damn powerful, right? It was done so unnecessarily. And I think about the scene where they're in the ship is trying to take off and Vader literally holds it with the force.
Yeah.
And I'm like, you could have had moments like that just building and you could have had other Jedi that, Quinlan Voss or whoever, and have him fight them. And people hated the Inquisitor. But I didn't mind it. I didn't mind it as a storyline. It's fine. It's cool. And let her think she's sneaking up on him. And then he toys with her as he did. Yeah. I thought that was really cool. It's just you can't have those two meet because of the law. As he says, when we last met, I was but the learner. Now I'm the master.
Yeah.
Dude, by the time they fight these two times, he's clearly a master. He's not a learner of anything. And Obi-Wan's response is only a master of evil, which is what he already is at that point when they meet. So it just was unnecessary, I just felt.
And the reason I say it should have been a movie is not just because of the scope, but because one of the things that TV forces you to do is that there needs to be... A movie needs one climax. A TV show with six episodes needs six climaxes. Yeah. So the reason that they had them meet is because they needed exciting things to happen each episode. Whereas if it's a movie, you don't need to pace it like that. You don't need to have these, big peaks every and you can have, because I can understand how, because it originally was a movie. And the reason why when you take a movie script and try to turn it into a TV show, it almost always is bad, is because movies aren't TV shows. They're not. I mean, right. TV shows aren't just long movies. And so I think if they were going to make it a TV show, I honestly think they should have completely started from scratch, because an idea that makes for a good movie does not necessarily and almost usually doesn't make for a good TV show.
Yeah, I think this has been it's a constant conversation that we have on this show as far as the streaming era and what has happened as a result of the streaming era is these things that were movies turn into TV shows as Marvel comes back after 2020 and releases all these things at once. It just throws things at us and dilutes the product. You don't realize that the product is diluted until then you're watching, oh, this is not as good as it was normally, but I mean, you seem like you wanted to say something.
Yeah, no, because I want to ask you guys from a Marvel standpoint. There's two things. One is the production value of Marvel stuff has gone down.
Yes,
right. The quality, like I'm not even talking about the story. I'm just talking about like effects and the way it looks.
Yep,
it's just not as sharp as it used to be. Then the other thing someone pointed out to me was it used to be, hey, I'm gonna go watch Captain America, Civil War. What do I need to know? It's like, well, you need to watch Black Panther, or not Black Panther hadn't happened yet. You need to have watched like Winter Soldier and Age of, and like, you know, maybe one more movie.
Yeah, the OG Avengers. Just to, yeah.
Well, I'm just saying, like, if you're someone who keeps up with Marvel movies, like if you watch those two movies, you pretty much are up to speed with what happens.
Right.
And now the Marvel movies are like, okay, well, here's the deal. You need to have watched Echo. You need to have watched She-Hulk. You need to have, like, all these TV shows that are all 30-minute episodes, 8 to 10 episodes a season. Like, that's hours and hours and hours and hours. Whereas, like, it used to be like, if I can take a weekend and catch myself up reasonably
and be up to date. I'll take the second one first, and then AC, you can take the first one. I think one of Marvel's problems is that a lot of the actual products they're putting out, I'd say Doctor Strange and the Multiverse of Madness is an exception to this. But for example, with the movie The Marvels, you, having watched it, I don't think you actually need to have seen Ms. Marvel in order to get it. They give enough of a backstory, you figure it out. And I think one of the problems is that they made a mistake, I think, of talking about these shows as if they would be essential to understanding the movies as a way to get people to try to watch the shows. But then when people don't watch the shows, they're like, well, I'm not going to see the movies because I haven't watched the shows. We're like, I think that the movies that they're putting out are one or two tweaks away from being completely legible to anyone. But once again, because they want people to think the shows are essential, they have to act as if you do need to watch all the stuff. And no one's going to do that. And so I think that the reason why Captain Marvel, a movie with a character that no one really knew or most people didn't care about, made $1 billion is because people thought it would be essential to see Endgame. And I think Marvel's problem now is that you can't manufacture things being essential. And I think they're trying, and that is hurting them and making stuff that's just quality. You know, like I think that they would be much better off if they're going to make a bunch of stuff, which, I mean, we do a show 52 weeks a year, so I hope they make a lot of stuff. If they're going to make a lot of stuff, I think they should accept it not all being essential and kind of just put that out in the open. And so people can be like, yeah, I haven't seen these TV shows, but these movies you normally don't need to. It's fine. You know, in the same way that you can watch, you know, when I was going to see the sequel trilogy, I wasn't like, well, I haven't watched The Clone Wars, so I don't know everything about Star Wars, you know?
Right.
I think, you know, when it comes to the production quality and everything like that, there's been stuff about how special effects workers have been treated. That's been a big part of this. Yeah. There's been stuff just generally about what the demands were in terms of the timing of getting things out. It's like, let's rush this. And it kind of falls in line with the point that Jake was making overall. And that he's made, honestly, since 2020. Jake has been in my ear for the last 3 years telling me that as far as TV and movies are concerned, like, oh, if you're going to do TV, you really got to make it TV. You can't do The Falcon and the Winter Soldier is a 6-hour movie. Yeah, that's just not going to logistically work as a long-term project. But it's been difficult for me to watch as a fan because it's like the Secret Invasion thing was the one that just like threw me off a ledge. Like,
it's the worst thing Marvel's ever done, I think, but basically with no competition.
I lost my mind because it's like and then you read the stories afterwards and then you could see why it happened. The absurd budget.
Well, part of it was because the original plot was like a virus, right? Like it was.
No,
it
that was Falcon Winter Soldier.
Oh, was that Falcon and Winter Soldier?
Yeah.
No. Well, see, not they were. Secret yeah, the Falcon was, and the Winter Soldier. Was, yeah, Secret Invasion was. They was supposed because I know like they originally wanted to do like this huge bomb going off in. Was it Russia or something like
that? Yeah, that's what it was.
I mean, but I think that is because the thing about Marvel's the effects are not looking good. The thing you know what reminds me of this is a dumb metaphor, but it's like how in America we have like the most uninsured people in big countries, but we still pay the most for health insurance, so we get the worst coverage, but we also pay more. Whereas Marvel movies. The Marvels cost like $100 million more than Dune 2, and Dune 2 looks way better. It's one or the other. And the reason is because, as AC was saying, what visual effects people will tell you is money cannot fix time. Time is the gold standard. And if you look, and I remember I was reading an interview with the visual effects supervisor on Dune 2, and he said it very frankly, it's like, how did you ever do this at such a low cost? It's because when Denis was on set, what this effect was going to look like was locked in. It was locked in when he was on set. And if you look at what's happening with these Marvel movies, they're putting up green screens everywhere, and they're basically what the producers are saying is, don't make any decisions because we want to be able to change it later on. And that's why everything looks like shit, because if you give producers the ability to change something 2 months out, they will take it and it will look bad.
Just for something as simple as Quantumania, originally, Kang was supposed to win and trap Scott Lang in that in the quantum realm. And then they just decided to have the Wasp come in at the end and yeet him and make him look like a joke. And to be quite honest,
Quantumania to me was the most disappointing. And you don't have to go outside and look into all of Marvel. I could just look at the two Ant-Man movies. And the tenor and the tone of Ant-Man was like, it's fun. It's silly. This guy, it's silly. This guy shrinks like to the size of an ant. Like, it's kind of like the least desirable of the superpowers. But they knew we're playing around here. You think about like his, like Scott Lang's crew.
Yeah, Luis.
My man, what's his name? God, I keep my man's name? What's Luis, the actor's name?
Michael Pena,
right? Like, it was always kind of lighthearted, but even when it's like, oh, am I gonna not be able to see my daughter or whatever? It still was like a funny, smart, like comedy, really. It was,
they were caper movies, like an old school caper.
And then Quantumania came out. I'm like, why are they taking themselves so seriously?
Yeah.
And it was, and that to me has been a hallmark of all of these recent Marvel movies, with the exception of Guardians 3. That's the only one. Every other Marvel movie that's come out has been, in the last 2 or 3 years, they're like DC movies. You guys are so, why so serious? Black Man, why are you guys so serious? His name? What is this? Marvel used to be the fun place. You think about Deadpool fighting Cable, and you think like, ooh, it's so dark and brooding, like a DC villain, right? Like, that's what he says, because that was the thing. Our culture in Marvel was like, we have fun over here. They're over there like, my parents died, and like doing that sad shit. And that's not saying that Marvel movies didn't touch on those things, and didn't get serious.
Yeah.
But when they did, it was high level, it was smart. It's like when I talked to with Maze about Star Wars, like my favorite Star Wars is politics Star Wars. I love when they're in the and they're arguing for like clone rights or clones even people and all that stuff. I love Andor because it's Star Wars politics about like the politics of the Empire. The ISB doesn't like this other division, whatever. So it's okay to be serious if it's smart. It's not like we must stop them and that. No, do that shit. That's
it's maudlin is what it is. That's the problem. Is it gets it's like and I agree with you, and I think a lot of people's rebuttal would be, because I think Thor Love and Thunder's big problem is that it's too silly at times. But the problem is, it's silly, and then it goes all the way to super seriousness. And then silly, and then all the way to super seriousness. And there's just like a lack of And I actually think that the Marvels handles this pretty well. I think the Marvels is actually mostly pretty fun. But I think that I agree with you that they are kind of making the mistake of thinking that stakes come from seriousness. And that I think the biggest issue I have with Quantumania in hindsight, besides the fact I think the actual biggest issue I have is that it looks like dog shit. But my second biggest issue is that they were acting as if the way to impart how big of a threat Kang is would be to make the tone of the movie serious. And that's not how that works. Stakes, you set up.
That was a rare one where it's like a lot of these other things, like all these movies have disposable villains.
Yeah.
Like even Guardians 3 that I enjoyed very much. Like I knew I don't have to care about this dude. He ain't going to be around by the end of it. Yes. Right. Like it's all of these movies have Marvel's disposable villain. Right. This was the rare one where it's like, okay, this is the guy who's going to be, and I get it, is this current incarnation or whatever, but I was like, you don't have to kill him. You don't have, this is what, Loki's doing a great job of building the mythology of this dude.
Yeah.
Just get on the street, which is the same thing that happened with Thanos, but even if you look at, what's his name, the Conqueror, he was in multiple movies, right?
Yeah. I mean, the thing I always point out, though, is that Thanos, the first movie where Thanos had more than 5 minutes of screen time was Avengers Infinity War. People, they set him up very briefly. Mm-hmm. And so I think one of the bigger problems with Quantumania is I think that they made a mistake of doing the big Kang villain movie 4 years before his main movie. Like, that was kind of... But beyond that, I guess I think that you're right, though, that in order to show that Kang is serious, Ant-Man doesn't need to become serious now. I think it was a mistake to make Ant-Man the person who met Kang first, but even that, with that besides the point, I don't know. I think that there's a... I find taking any of this stuff super seriously is always a mistake, because although I care about these things a lot, I mean, I've been doing this show for over 6 years, this is people in spandex. And I think that people who are not dedicated to this shit, regular people, because the thing I always tell people is, these movies make $1 billion. That means that every type of person goes to see them. They're not just nerds going to see them. And people who are not nerds about this shit, they don't want to watch people in spandex take shit seriously. No one does.
I'm going to tell you real quick. You know what the scariest part is? When James Gunn is done with DC, everything's going to have flip-flop. Because they're doing it over. If you watch Suicide Squad, if you watch Peacemaker, it's like, they get it now.
We have talked about it already, but the way that he seems to have set up this Superman cast and this whole idea with every actor, everybody who he's brought in, there just seems like there's a certain palpable energy. Like Fantastic Four is supposed to come out the same month as this movie, and me and Jake were in agreement that we are more excited about the Superman movie because we want to see Gunn's take on it. We're very fascinated to see how he brings this thing to life. I think a further point I'll add about some of the Marvel movies that have passed. So Shang-Chi, which came out in 2021, was it was a hit that did surprisingly well, and it did well. We have not seen this character, or not seen an inkling or a whiff. And we're going to be in 2025 next year before they even start filming the second one, which is when you had Iron Man, you had the Iron Man 1, Iron Man 2 came out 2 years later. Thor, kind of similar. You went 2 years later. You get the proximity of actually seeing these characters, and the visibility is just as important if you're trying to get these new characters over. You can't just put Shang-Chi and then just discard him for 5 years. It's not going to work.
Well, again, did well.
It did really well.
Commercially did well. And then as far as critically, it did well. People like that movie and like that character. And I think that movie is unlike its brethren.
Yeah, it's a fresh, you ain't seen martial arts in Marvel like that.
But also it's more in terms of the tone, it's closer to heyday Marvel. Where it's where it's fun. It's fun. There are stakes, but
The stakes are very character-based, because that's always the thing about Marvel, is that when it gets serious in relatable ways. It's not
the world is going to end. The world is going to end with...
No, the thing is, I think one of the problems that Marvel often has is if the stakes get too big, the thing that I think that when Marvel works best, the world is going to end, but you care because the characters are dying, right? Like, the magic trick of Infinity War is the ending is not sad because half the world dies. It's sad because characters you like die. Like, you don't actually, you're not really thinking about the rest of the world, and that's the magic trick of it. Because humanity, you can't comprehend 3 billion people dying, right? But you can comprehend Spider-Man disappearing. And so that's the magic of that. And I think when it doesn't work is when they try to make the stakes, you know, just generic, like I said, like the Zack Snyder gothic, like gods kidding, you know, that type of thing. Yeah. And so, yeah, AC brought up the Shang-Chi thing because I remember we were doing a pod and I looked it up and I'm like, holy shit, Iron Man was in 4 movies in 5 years when Marvel started.
Yeah, it's a real thing.
Let me ask you guys this on that note. Is Marvel's problem also that they shot their load with their most famous, most well-known characters, and now they're trying to get us to care about people that like you said, $1 billion, that's the rank and file. No Captain America before there was a Captain America movie. They know the Incredible Hulk. They know Spider-Man. They know Iron Man, right? Now you're getting to, like, again, I the idea that Echo gets her own series. It's like, guys, you're really squeezing blood out of a rock. When you're trying to, you know, in the same way that, like, you know, it would be like, hey, you know who should get their own Star Wars series? Like, what's his name? Fucking Jabba's little pet.
That little monster?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Not, Salacious B. Crumb.
Salacious B. Crumb. I don't need... Or Bib Fortuna. I don't need their backstory.
I mean, this is the thing that I go back to because I think a lot about, like, this being viable is, like, and if you're going to do an Echo series, it should cost $2 million an episode. Like, you know what I mean? Like, it just because Marvel's incapable of making anything that doesn't need to be a gigantic hit, which, like, that's not a way to make things. You can't, that's Hollywood's whole problem in general. I mean, it's the whole thing that Cord Jefferson said in his Oscar speech that Hollywood would rather try to make a movie for $200 million. That needs to make $800 million than, you know, $10, $20 million movies. And so, like, that, I mean, if I was running Marvel, what I would basically say is, you know, the TV shows can't cost as much as the movies, period. Like, they just can't. There's Secret Invasion. It can't cost as much as the movie. It can't. Like, that's horrible. You'll never make money off of that.
You'll never make money off it anyway.
I understand that. But, like, I obviously, we want to talk about things I've been talking about since 2020. AC can tell you, streaming is not a profitable business model. And it's like, why does Netflix keep raising money? Keep raising the prices. Because they're not fucking making any money.
All across the board. Everything. Paramount. And then you're going to find yourself going back to cable at the end of it by the time in the next couple years. Amazon with that hidden $2, no ads and stuff like that. Yeah. But, you and me talking about getting the characters over, it's like, it just reminds me of that tweet I saw from Tej yesterday about, you know, Anthony Mackie as a hashtag not my cap for this next movie. You know, are people going to buy Anthony Mackie, Sam Wilson, Captain America? I don't know. It feels like it's going to be a tough sell, even though we've known the character for a while. But is he going to carry his own film? That's just, you know, these are fair questions to ask.
The character isn't charismatic enough, and the actor isn't charismatic enough.
Nope.
People realize, like, part of Iron Man's success is, yes, Iron Man is a super popular, super famous character in the Marvel Universe. And the other part of it is Robert Downey Jr. is really fucking good.
Honestly, I think it's like 80% Robert Downey Jr.
Yeah, it's a big part of it.
In a way that Anthony Mackie is not.
No.
Right? It could never be.
Because the thing is, like, I think they could have transitioned to another Captain America and still be successful because Chris Evans is not like a generational talent of an actor or anything. But I think that Anthony Mackie just does not have the juice really at all. And like, I think even, you know, someone like Sebastian Stan has more juice, although even he still doesn't have enough. But I don't know. I think to answer your thing about like the characters, like people don't know, I think that that's why like the Fantastic Four is really going to help. And then when they bring the X-Men, I mean, but I think the problem is that they're taking too long to do all these things.
I'm going to tell you right now, Fantastic Four, I thought about this. This is a decade plus now. It is impossible to do the Fantastic Four.
I think you're probably right.
because here's the reality, because, and this is the thing a lot of comic book nerds don't want to admit to. Some of these comic premises were so fucking idiotic. They should have never gotten off the ground. Think about the Fantastic Four. I'm Reed Richards, the smartest man in the world. I've got an experiment. I have a belief about what's happening, cosmic rays outside, you know, approaching Earth. I go to my bosses at the Pentagon or whatever. They don't want to greenlight it. So me and my partner, Ben Grimm, who is a brilliant scientist, but for some reason sounds like a construction worker because he's from Brooklyn. We're going to break into a federal facility, launch an aircraft illegally, and go up there to investigate this thing. And we're not going to get stopped. But, oh, here's the problem. My girlfriend wants to tag along. She's like, I'm not letting you go there. And like, oh, here's another problem. Her little brother's like, well, I'm not letting you go either. It's insane. Like, that's not, like, if you pitch that, someone would be like, absolutely not. Versus like Spider-Man is like, hey, high school kid get bitten by a radioactive spider. Now I have superpowers. Like, oh, okay, I can see how that happens, you know? Right? Like, obviously, like, there's a suspension of disbelief, but it's like, it's suspension of disbelief over the existence of superpowers, over the existence that the idea that a radioactive spider can transmit those superpowers, not over, hey, we're going to sneak into this federal facility with my girlfriend and her little brother and my construction worker, brilliant scientist friend. Like, that's not a suspension of disbelief we can ever have. And for that reason, I'm like, you got to punt Fantastic Four. You got to go find some other shit over there to do. X-Men, that's doable.
I would not be surprised if they do some alterations to the origin story of the Fantastic Four to make it more plausible. Because I think they've whiffed twice on the Fantastic Four, obviously. I mean, not really whiffed, because the first one made money, but...
Three times. They made a sequel to the first one.
They did. Yeah. Well, the first one, a fact I always go back to, is that the first one was the highest grossing movie directed by a black director until Black Panther.
Oh, wow.
Which is insane.
I will say this, they cannot whiff this again. If they whiff this again, oh boy, it might be...
I'm predicting, like, this is Marvel at its weakest right now in recent history. Mm-hmm. Plus, like I said... a very weak premise for a story. The only way they can do it. I'm gonna tell you how. You got to do what they did with Spider-Man. Yep. Look, you guys know how they're the Fantastic Four. I'm not gonna explain it to you. Yeah. We're just gonna start with Fantastic Four go on this adventure. That's the only way you could do it. But if you're gonna sit here and tell me how, nah, man.
If you put a gun to my head, I actually think they'll probably do that in some fashion. I think they'll might have like some flashbacks to it, but I don't think the movie starts with them being unpowered. Just based on how successful the Spider-Man version of that was, how they've had, because the two previous iterations have so much stink on them. And honestly, one of the biggest things is the fact that they cast a 50-year-old to play Reed Richards. I think that they're probably imagining a version where it's further on.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I mean, similarly to, I mean, James Gunn's Superman, James Gunn said like, yeah, we're not doing him coming to Earth as a baby. Now we just fast forward. We going right. He has the suit and everything. He's been doing this for a minute.
You know who Superman is. It's like, you know who Superman is. Just do it.
Right. Yeah, man. It's an interesting time for Disney Plus. But I wanna thank Amino Hassan for joining us. This was a lot of fun. We will definitely when the Acolyte comes on, we'll see if we could circle back and get some of your thoughts on it. Appreciate you for joining us, man. Where can we follow you, find your work? And yeah, tell us about Rule of Two, since this was a Star Wars themed show.
Yeah, so Rule of Two, you can find it wherever you get podcasts. It's under Metalark Media's Levitard show, Levitard and Friends feed. Levitard and Friends is the feed. I realize I said a lot of things there that don't make a lot of sense. But yes, Rule of Two, we're a limited run podcast, which means we only do episodes when Star Wars things are happening. So right now, Bad Batch is on. We're on doing weekly recaps of every episode, plus all the other news tidbits that come out. So last week we did a review of The Acolyte as well. We did a review of the Gina Carano feature that was in The Hollywood Reporter, I want to say. It's kind of batshit crazy. But yeah, we talk about all those things. And then when this season is over of Bad Batch, we'll be off until Acolyte comes on, and then we'll be back on, and et cetera. So it's Rule of Two. Dartha means Rule of Two. Like I said, get it wherever you get podcasts.
Mm-hmm. Awesome, and make sure you pick up that shirt that Bomb just put out.
Oh, yeah, that's right. The merch. Yeah, merch, Count the Dings merch.
Count the Dings merch. You could get it. Just go to at Count the Dings on Twitter or Instagram. We've got the link in the bio, and you could get all of the stuff that we got there, including a very, you know, it's funny, the original idea for the silhouette of the jump shot was going to be a WNBA style orange hoodie. Oh. And then our supplier didn't have orange hoodies. So now there's a limited run of orange versions of that hoodie that we are going to be selling, I believe, only to our Patreons, patreon.com/countthedings/only to people who go to our live show in Toronto. We have a live show in Toronto April 6th at the Soho House in Toronto. So I'll be honest with you. I think you have to be a Soho House member slash a Patreon member, and we're taking a limited amount of those people. So these are very, the orange one is going to be a status symbol if you have the orange silhouette jump shot hoodie. You're, that means you really got in. See, I don't even get one, I don't think.
See, I really appreciate, though, you're, you know, turning this into, you know, something to sell. It's like, I remember, I was actually trying to look at who it was. I remember reading once about a politician who who produced buttons that said "I hate their name." So then, whenever anyone who didn't like them bought a button, it went to his campaign. It's like, you know what? If people are going to make fun of the jump shot on the internet, you might as well make money off of it. And so, you know,
yes, it's
funny.
Yes,
I thought you were going to say a politician who sells Bibles.
No. No, I was not. I was not going to compare you to that man.
What's your favorite Bible verse? There's so many. I like them all. It wouldn't be fair to them. As if like the Bible verses would feel offended. Like, oh, Donald, I thought I was your favorite.
The best.
Wait, LeBron. I was about to say LeBron went into politics.
The classic Trump religious moment I think about a lot, which I don't think it's talked about enough, is when he said, "I'm reading from 2 Corinthians."
That one. Oh my gosh. Yes. But yes, and shout out to Anthony Mays, who for whatever reason the last time he was frequenting on our show confused you and me, Amin.
Oh,
and
then you multiple times.
And then you could not remember who I was.
Oh, right, we called you the mailman.
Yeah, the mailman, Anthony.
The mailman always delivers. Not like Karl Malone. I don't want to be compared to him in any way.
I've been forgetting a lot more names lately. I forgot. I wanted to call Gina Carano Carlo Gugino earlier. So.
The bitch wife. Shout out to Cinephobe. Yeah. Wonderful stuff. Appreciate you, Amin. Yep. Jake, where can we follow you, sir?
You can follow me at the Jake Christie. Listen to my other podcast, Love It for Psych, talking about the USA Network original series Psych with Andre Barrera.
Awesome. You can follow me on Twitter at AnthonyCanton_3. Follow the show at MC University Pod. Subscribe to the YouTube channel, MC University Podcast, patreon.com/MC University Pod, where you can get our bonus content. We just did Mission Impossible 3. That is out. Go check it out. We're continuing the Mission Impossible series as we go. We got the subscriber mailbag, and we also got Bracket First Take with our big time tournament that is winding down.
I binged all the Mission Impossibles like about 2 months ago, I want to say, because it was right before they released Dead Reckoning on Paramount Plus. Mm-hmm. So I was like, oh, let me just catch up and watch all of these. And because I've always loved Mission Impossible movies and have no recollection what they're about. So I was like, okay, let me watch them. And I got to say, Dead Reckoning, that might be my favorite, man.
It's probably it might be my second favorite.
It's like a little below Fallout for me, like a little, like teensy weensy.
The last three are all basically really close.
Five, six, and seven are just like.
I would say the next closest one to Dead Reckoning is Mission Impossible 3 with Philip Seymour Hoffman.
I mean,
3 is a great one.
We talk about it. As I said, it's really a as I say in the pod, it's really a blessing that Mission Impossible had the best actor of his generation play a villain in it. It's a thing that not a lot of franchises can say.
Yep.
Yes. Yes. Awesome stuff. So, well, with that, keep supporting the show. Appreciate everybody for supporting it. And for Amin Al-Hassan and Jake Christie, I'm Anthony Canton III. This is Marvel Cinematic University, and we will talk to you next time.